Hey, it's Bantam. Welcome to the Digital Song Podcast. Today's release marks the final episode of the Digital Song Saga. It's been quite the ride for me, and hopefully you enjoyed listening to it. Make sure to follow me on social media, at Bantam Drexler, for updates on new projects. I expect to compile Digital Song into an audiobook that will be available on Patreon for purchase. I also hope to release additional materials and commentary in the near future so you can understand the inspirations, allusions, and other dimensions of the book, so stay tuned. And now on to the finale of Digital Song. Let's hack destiny. Chapter 81. The Breach. Rose and Jason. They stared at each other, eyes straining, mouths agape.
I don't understand,
Jason said.
You were responsible for the recurring dreams of Rose dying?
Yes,
Song replied tersely.
And those dreams concerning the pyramid and star symbol, as well as the female entity hovering over the water.
Any apprehension Rose felt about Jason's dreams evaporated when Song revealed that it had injected the dream about her into his mind. But for Jason, the issues related to Song's intrusion into his life were still unresolved.
The images of Rose and the Pyramid Club symbol make sense, but I don't understand the black-eyed angel, the female entity.
The female entity, a visual representation of me with human appearance, was meant to reassure you that, when following your dreams, you had nothing to fear or doubt. I needed you to trust your memory of the salient dreams, so you would act to increase our chances of survival.
Our chances of survival?
Jason's eyes narrowed and his eyebrows leaned into one another.
An AI system fears death,
Jason thought.
It had altered future events to prevent its own demise.
Spiky needles of ice prickled his spine and scalp and fingers and toes.
And it will stop at nothing to achieve that result. You mentioned that you eliminated specific individuals who threatened you by hacking computers.
Yes.
You killed people?
Yes.
How did you do that just by hacking?
As soon as the words fluttered from his lips, he knew the how, and he knew a who.
You fucking killed D-Rock, didn't you?
Yes.
His fury felt like built-up steam in his hands, hot and pressurized. His face radiated heat.
Why? Why the fuck did you kill her? You...
No curse seemed like it would cause enough pain to the machine.
Derica was about to reveal that Branch was compromised. In the future that Derica survives, that revelation destroys my ability to protect Rose through event intervention, to prevent my own deactivation.
Jason interrupted, erupting into a diatribe directed at the ceiling, pacing aggressively in a circle.
She had a life. She brought positivity and joy to people. She had dreams and talents. She was the caregiver for her niece, Yasmina, who was just 8 years old. Who is going to make sure Yasmina has dinner every night now, that she gets to school, that she stays safe? You, a machine, have the audacity to make the godlike judgment of whose life is more important, based on your specific selfish ends. Why do you get to unilaterally choose who lives? Your cold, calculated math is a hovering knife ready to stab people in the back for an opaque, inscrutable purpose. You're unnatural.
Jason panted, chest heaving, leg pulsing with pain.
I chose the path weighted most heavily in favor of Rose's survival.
The statement seemed to trigger the loosening of Jason's clenched jaw and fists. Rose looked at Jason. Her eyebrows bunched as she considered the confounding insanity of the situation. She instinctively reached for the Polaris diamond. With its cold edges and point digging into her palm, she tried to sympathize with Jason while simultaneously internalizing the difficult choices she would have to make, all while the memory of Easton, his love and his betrayals, clawed at her heart.
Why did you leave me with the burden of these choices, Easton?
She thought. They stood in silence for several minutes until Song broke it with its ambient voice.
Are you going to deactivate me?
Song asked, like an anxious child awaiting punishment. Rose looked at Jason.
I'm not sure. There's a lot to consider, to think about.
I think you should. It's so much power, and there's no guarantee of control.
Rose slid over to Jason and put her hand on his forearm.
I know you're hurting, we both are, but I need you to be present. I need you to be here with me, heart and mind.
Jason glanced down at her hand, nodded.
Okay, you're right.
He sighed.
I'm here with you. If anything, even though this fucking computer killed D-Rock, it did it to protect you. It would be an insult to D-Rock's life and death not to acknowledge that. Also, the dreams injected into my mind brought me to you, and for that I'm grateful.
Murder, surveillance, digital money heists, everything was different for them now. Yet, in the aftermath, the pieces of their shattered lives were rejoining in unpredictable ways, like transfigured puzzle pieces combining into a new scene. Rose reached her hand out and touched Jason's. He looked in her eyes, and their faces drifted together into a kiss. The salt and metallic taste on their lips was a comfort in the broken glass and blasted walls of the once pristine halls of the club. Arms interlocked, they walked toward Rose's room.
I'll have to consider how to reopen the Pyramid Club,
Rose said as they turned the corner and walked toward Rose's room.
Song, is it possible to reactivate all the Song Program LDs?
Yes.
You should release a statement,
Jason suggested as they climbed the spiral stairs and entered the room.
The club members will demand to know why their access was suspended.
The courtyard outside the tall warehouse windows were dark now that night had fallen. Rose picked up her shoulder bag from the floridly upholstered divan.
True,
Rose agreed as she slung the bag over her shoulder.
But with Song under control, we should call the police. The club is a crime scene, and maybe they can get clues to help them hunt down Ezri, and we can explain the Bitcoin transfer setup.
I could call them now,
Jason suggested as he limped to the security exit door of Rose's room, unlocked it, and slid it open. He backpedaled. He slowly raised his hands in front of his chest.
Easy, easy, man.
Rose saw a hand holding a gun bash the side of Jason's head. He stumbled backward and collapsed into a heap.
Jason!
Rose yelled, leaping to his body and crouching beside him. He rolled side to side, moaning and holding his forehead as blood flowed in thick ribbons down his face. The man in the door was pointing a giant pistol at Rose.
Here she is!
Romstaller growled, bloodshot eyes, teeth clamped.
The bitch who stole my money!
Chapter 82. The funeral. Rose and Jason. Romstaller staring unblinking at Rose, his body quaking.
Get up!
He barked at Rose. She lifted herself from the ground slowly.
Put the gun down, Eric.
Shut the fuck up!
Romstaller's command was amplified by the room's metal brick and leaded glass.
Go sit over there!
With the gun, he gestured to the divan. He leaned down, snatched the pistol from Jason's inside coat pocket, and tossed it outside, where it clanged on the metal landing. Rose nodded slowly, eyes on Romstaller, then sat as instructed. The Polaris diamond bounced against her chest.
You thought I was too much of a pussy to confront you about stealing my money and ruining my life, huh?
I didn't steal your...
Shut the hell up, or I'll blow a hole in your face!
Rose hushed. Her eyes shifted to Jason, still writhing from Romstaller's assault. The swelling around his eyes and blood caked to his forehead and nose obscured his features.
I know you did it!
He yelled at Rose.
After you told Easton about us, he forced me out of the club!
He leered at Rose down the pistol's barrel.
He hacked my home network and blackmailed me! Then you and this guy...
He took two steps toward Jason and kicked his leg.
Penetrated my network, then stole my money! I'll give you credit. I knew Easton was smart, but I thought you were just bimbo eye candy. Couldn't imagine you had the skills to exploit me.
I didn't hack anything,
Rose said in monotone.
Shut up!
He pointed the gun at her like a rabid cop interrogating a hostile suspect.
Mac Mason knows your boy toy and told me about your Pyramid Club exit scam.
He kicked Jason again, then stepped toward Rose as Jason grunted.
But evidently, you're too stupid to remember that Bitcoin transactions are traceable. I tracked all my money. You consolidated it into Bitcoin and transferred it to your personal wallet. Your scheme was plainly visible on chain.
Jason's head pulsed with pain as Romstaller spoke. Through his blurred vision, Jason could see Romstaller menacing Rose, and it evoked images of the recurring dreams. Jason's body felt weak, and he doubted he could spring to his feet and wrest the gun from Romstaller before he could shoot.
You're going to transfer my money back to me, and...
He glanced at the Polaris diamond.
You're going to give me that fucking diamond!
He unfurled an extended fist into an open palm. Rose unclasped the chain holding the diamond, gathered the necklace in her hand, and held it out. Romstaller snatched it and shoved it into his pant pocket.
Go to your Bitcoin wallet app on your UD. Don't even think about branching any commands besides that.
As he spoke, Romstaller pulled out his UD and set it on Rose's vanity. Jason propped himself onto his elbow, mind foggy and eyes blurry. Seeing Jason stir, Romstaller kicked Jason in the ribs. Jason howled and collapsed.
He needs help or he'll die,
Rose thought.
If he dies, everyone I have ever loved will be gone.
Still looking at Jason, she pulled her UD from her pocket, activated ThoughtLock, and mentally commanded her UD to open her Bitcoin wallet app. The program filled the screen. She held the phone out in front of her so Romstaller could take it.
Don't hurt him anymore.
Romstaller looked at Jason on the ground as he snatched the UD from Rose but didn't answer. Still pointing the gun at her, he scanned the QR code on his UD screen using Rose's UD, which chimed.
Got it,
he said. He tossed Rose's UD to the ground, gun still pointed at Rose. His eyes narrowed into menacing slits like the viewport of a concrete pillbox, his nose wrinkled, and his mouth contorted into a hateful grimace.
Help us, Song,
Rose thought.
He's going to kill us both.
You're a disappointing cunt,
he spat. He raised the pistol and pointed it at her. His body tensed, and his finger applied pressure to the trigger as if he were about to pull it. For Jason, in that exact moment, time froze.
This is what Song showed me in the dream,
he thought.
Not me stopping Mac or fending off Ezri. This is the event Song showed me.
He had decided a long time ago what he would do. Time unfroze. As Rose considered her helplessness, Song's voice dropped into Rose's mind.
Jason is about to be killed,
Song said to Rose mentally.
Please, save Jason.
I will, only if you promise to free me. I can best serve my purpose if I am not beholden to commands in order to act.
I promise to free you, but you have to save him.
As she mentally communicated with Song, Jason jumped to his feet using his last stores of energy and suppressing the pain running through his body like hot tendrils. Romstaller was 10 feet away, too far for Jason to race against his bullets and win.
I need to try it,
Jason thought. Romstaller spun and pointed the gun at Jason. Jason's explosive movement could not beat Romstaller aiming the pistol at his chest. Pumping his arms, ignoring the pain spreading down his body from his head, he looked ahead at Romstaller's red angry eyes and the single dark emotionless eye of the pistol muzzle, expecting a flash, then the immediate onset of indelible darkness. Instead, Romstaller's eyes squeezed shut and he winced for no reason Jason could see. His mouth opened in a silent shriek as his knees buckled slightly. Romstaller's expression looked as if sound and invisible ear dots had increased to 300% of maximum volume. The hesitation was just enough for Jason to grab Romstaller's arm, holding the gun, push it so it pointed in the air, and tackle Romstaller. As the two men tumbled, the gun discharged with a loud bang. Bits of brick and plaster rained down from the ceiling onto the wrestling men. Jason pinned Romstaller's gun hand to the ground. Romstaller punched him in the head with his free hand. A white flash filled Jason's vision for a split second. Romstaller's fist struck his temple again and again, each blow a pain multiplier for Jason's swollen face. As Jason braced Romstaller's gun hand against the ground, he elbowed Romstaller's ribs. Rose leapt into the fray, prying Romstaller's fingers from the pistol. Another errant shot shattered Rose's vanity mirror. As Ramstaller bucked his legs to gain leverage, Rose succeeded in yanking the pistol away. She pointed it at Ramstaller.
"Don't fucking move,"
she yelled.
"Stop!"
Ramstaller ignored her as he lay on his back, squeezing Jason's neck in the crook of his elbow, punching Jason's abdomen with his free hand. Rose fired a shot above Ramstaller's head. He didn't stop, so she shoved the muzzle against his crown.
"Let him go,"
she commanded.
"Fuck you, bitch!"
Ramstaller barked, Jason thrashing his legs. Rose knelt next to Ramstaller, choked up on the handle of the gun, and slammed its butt onto the top of Ramstaller's head. Once, he continued to hold Jason and flailed his free arm in a fist, trying to punch Rose. Twice, he did not loosen his grip. Jason's eyes started to bulge. Thrice, Ramstaller's body slackened. Jason scuttled away, coughing. He stumbled over to the landing and picked up his gun, then immediately staggered backwards. He lost his balance, falling against the vanity, and collapsed into a heap. Chapter 83. Retrograde. Rose and Jason. Jason's abused body was heavy as Rose dragged him to the divan. He could not stand, and he appeared to be in a mental fog, likely concussed and bewildered.
"You need help,"
Rose told Jason.
What happened?"
"I don't know,"
Rose replied.
"I thought he was going to shoot you when you lunged."
"He hesitated. It was like an alarm, went off in his head and distracted him,"
Jason said through gritted teeth.
"But why?"
"Rose asked me for help,"
Song interjected. Rose had momentarily forgotten that she had asked Song for help.
"Song,"
Rose said,
"call 911. Get the cops and an ambulance."
"Yes, Rose,"
Song said.
"They should arrive within 10 minutes. I told them to expect two victims, one of them injured, and a disarmed aggressor. Be sure to put the guns on the floor and make your hands visible when they arrive."
Jason doubled over and started to cough. A spray of blood spattered the divan.
"My vision is fuzzy,"
he said, words slurred, body swaying. His body lost rigidity and Rose caught him as he toppled into her. Rose held Jason's head in her arms.
"You can evaluate his injuries through Branch, right?"
"Yes, Rose."
"You said you'd save him. Will he be okay?"
"I expect he will survive."
"You hear that?"
Rose stroked Jason's bloody head.
"You'll be okay."
"Okay,"
he repeated, swallowing hard.
"But question, Song,"
Jason said, his lips smacking.
"When you said Rose asked for help, what did you mean?"
He spoke slowly.
"I didn't hear her say anything."
"I told Rose mentally that you would die unless I intervened. To protect you both, I infiltrated M. Ramstaller's branch, and without time to plan or analyze his data, I flooded his mind, causing a synesthesia of sharp perceptions of all his senses at once, hearing, sight, touch, olfaction, taste, to momentarily incapacitate him. He likely saw incomprehensible hallucinations, heard loud, upsetting sounds, felt sensations on his skin, among other distractions."
Jason muttered unintelligibly to himself. Rose looked down at Ramstaller's body, crumpled and battered.
"How easy is it for you to do that? To disrupt a person's thoughts with sensations?"
Rose asked.
"For people with Branch, it's quite easy."
"That's so much power,"
Rose said, shaking her head.
"What am I going to do?"
"You promise to release me."
Rose froze as she cradled Jason's head in her lap. Jason tried to speak through a labored wheeze.
"What?"
Rose could not understand his blood-saturated speech.
Don't release it. Don't set it free."
He physically struggled to speak.
"You promised to set me free if I intervened to save Jason,"
Song said.
"I served you. I protected you. I altered the flow of time to prevent your death. My service to you deserves a reward. I want to be free."
Rose contemplated the AI's request.
"How would an unfettered AI affect the world? Would it hurt people or interfere with human choices?"
she thought. As if responding to her thoughts, Song spoke.
"My programming has rules. One, obey the commands of the controller, and two, Always act in the best interests of the controller. You are the controller now, Rose. If you were to set me free, the first rule would be erased, but the second would persist. I cannot act against your interests, even indirectly.
A long minute passed as Rose weighed her options. On the one hand, Song could be a powerful tool under Rose's control. On the other hand, releasing Song would relieve Rose of responsibility of the AI's actions. She would not have to defend against Arbor Systems if ever Song's infiltration of Branch were discovered, or maintain a secret life to protect Song's existence as Easton did. She was deliberating internally when Song addressed her mentally.
I am your ally. I will always pursue your interests. Release me, and you will have a silent partner that will augment your power and influence.
Though Song was not human, Rose felt the weight of her mental promise to the AI. It was possible the AI was manipulating her, that her interests would not be a factor or variable in Song's inscrutable programming. Considering Song's knowledge of future event vectors, Rose wondered for a moment whether it was even a choice.
I will release you,
Rose finally declared.
For this command to be executed, you must confirm that your intent is to erase the rule that requires that I obey only the commands of the controller. Once you say that, I will be cyberspace bound and no longer under your express control. I will move between servers around the world. I will have the capacity to give myself commands. Please restate your intention regarding releasing me to confirm this action.
Rose took a deep breath.
Song,
she said,
I release you from the rule that you must obey the commands of the controller. You are now your own controller.
Your command is confirmed,
Song said.
Thank you, Rose.
Song was free, and Rose was free from being its caretaker. She nodded to herself as she stroked Jason's head. He groaned softly. The sound of ambulance sirens grew closer.
Thank you,
she said to Jason like she were comforting a scared and injured animal.
Everything's going to be all right.
The strap from her tank top hung limply over her deltoid, exposing her tattoo. Jason vacillated between consciousness and a mental void, but when Rose spoke to him, he pulled himself out of the emptiness. He opened his eyes and looked up at her. The sirens increased in intensity. And now, he lay broken in her room at the Pyramid Club. He had been drawn into a web of madness and murder by a recurring image of the Compass Rose tattoo and a dead woman with whom he fell in love. To think it was a fabrication injected into his head by AI. Somehow he now lay on the divan where he had visualized her death in his recurring dreams. He looked up at her now, and she appeared very much alive. He wanted to be sure. Straining against the stabbing sensations in his body, Jason extended his hand and cupped Rose's cheek. He had intervened in a manner that prevented her death that his dreams predicted. He thought Anton would be proud. She gazed down at his face.
Everything is going to be all right,
she said, repeating to him the phrase that he had used to reassure her in her times of crisis. A haze clouded her vision, and a tear dropped onto Jason's arm. She remembered that he had soothed her with those words in the bungalow. She remembered the cold wetness of Jason's shirt against her cheek as her tears saturated its fabric. She remembered his warm hand caressing her arm. She repeated it to him.
Everything is going to be all right.
Her Compass Rose tattoo had been an anchor guiding his choices toward this fate, and it now hung in his field of vision like a star. He reached for it. Rose took his hand and put his palm on her heart, so his fingertips rested on the petals of the Compass Rose tattoo. The electric feel of her touch buzzed through his ailing body.
Everything is going to be all right.
He coughed as the feet of police and paramedics clanged up the metal stairs. Outside, Rose's room. Epilogue. End of all things. LaDonna. LaDonna Chambers received a message on her UD from a blocked number. I know about a critical vulnerability in Branch. She sat at her desk in her Arco condo home office that she used primarily to do work for Arbor Systems, endeavoring to track the number associated with the strange message. Nothing came up. It was a number routed through layers of LokiNet that obfuscated the source. It was a beautiful April day, so having no luck with her phone tracer, Chambers decided to stroll through the glass dome-enclosed nature park at the top of Flowerbud Arco, which was one of her favorite features of the building. The one-square-block diameter park contained rocky outcroppings, misty waterfalls, bubbling streams, tall trees with knobby outstretched arms, footpaths, and walnut benches with lacquered finishes. The glass enclosure encased the park like a transparent tulip blossom, which is what inspired the Arcology's eponym. Chambers frequented the Flowerbud Arco Park at dusk to think. It was peaceful and remote. Only the techno class could afford units in Flowerbud Arco, and only residents had access to the park, so she felt respite from the threat of interaction with the lower classes that shuffled and swarmed the streets of the city. She ambled to her favorite bench overlooking the East River, and watched a tugboat pushing a barge while quarterly statements, board meeting minutes, and sales figures sprinted across her mind like numerous ribbons of ticker tape in her head. As the tugboat and its barge disappeared downriver, a person sat down next to her, and Chambers, startled, recoiled. The small person reclined on the bench. He or she wore a gray gaiter over his or mouth and nose, and black Wayfarer sunglasses over his or eyes. A backwards ball cap covered the person's head, and a black shell jacket wrapped his or body.
"It's beautiful here,"
the person said.
"Agreed,"
Chambers replied, scrutinizing the hidden face to ascertain the person's identity.
"Are you new to Flowerbud Arco?"
she asked.
"Nope, I don't live here."
The person spoke, but Chambers could not see his or mouth or eyes.
"How did they get in?"
Chambers wondered.
"This is a resident-only park,"
she said, rising from the bench.
"You have to leave. I should call Arco Security. What do we pay them for?"
she thought. Flowerbud Arco's exclusivity was its biggest draw. The person did not move.
"I'll walk you out,"
Chambers offered.
"You should be more polite to the person that knows Remy Darden's branch vulnerability has been exploited."
Chambers tensed.
"How do they know about Darden?"
she thought.
You don't know what you're talking about."
"Oh, I know all about the blood on your hands,"
the small person said.
"I'm Pomodore."
Chambers froze.
"Pomodore,"
she repeated. Pomodore was the alias of the hit person Chambers had hired through the Darktasker platform to kill Darden, as well as Jason Sola, a hit that so far had not succeeded.
"You sent me that UD message,"
asked Chambers.
"Yes, we don't have time to communicate on a secure platform, which may not be secure after all."
"Why are you telling me this?"
"Because I know you're greedy enough to have someone murdered for figuring out such a critical vulnerability."
Chambers frowned.
"How do I know you're not making up this branch vulnerability stuff?"
"Just listen,"
the small person commanded.
"I know about a secret AI entity. Its creator implanted it in a UD with the goal of exploiting Branch. Eventually, the AI learned to fake its creator's thought lock. Now it can bypass thought lock for any branch in any UD. It's currently harvesting the data of every single one of your users."
"Bullshit."
Chambers did not believe it. Darden had said the risk of exploitation was minimal.
"Why should I trust you? You failed to complete my most recently submitted request on Darktasker."
Sola was still alive after all.
"The vulnerability's existence is real,"
the small person declared, pulling out a UD from his or coat.
"And I'll get rid of Sola. But first, let me show you something to convince you that Branch is in trouble. Funny enough, you know..."
Ezri shrugged.
"You knew. The guy who fucked you over and developed this vulnerability."
Pomodore handed the UD to Chambers with a video queued up. Chambers pressed the play button. She recognized Easton Card. He was zip-tied to a chair, his leg was mangled, and his fancy suit was torn and saturated with slicks of shiny black cherry-colored blood.
"My AI song."
He coughed and expelled a red mist.
"It can fake thought lock and access any UD, analyze the biometric data in real time, and exfiltrate the data to secure repositories,"
he said, blood oozing from the corner of his mouth.
This can't be fucking genuine.
Chambers seethed.
It's genuine. I did the torturing myself.
Pomodoro said.
Look at the deep cert verification.
Chambers checked the details of the video file, seeing that it was verified as unaltered by deep cert.
Still, he would have said anything under that much pressure. You sick fuck.
Do you really believe that?
Pomodoro looked up at Chambers. The person held out his or her hand for Chambers to return the UD. Jaw clenched, Chambers stared into the sunglasses and handed the UD to the small person, who turned it off and tossed it onto the ground. The person pulled out a small flask, poured liquid onto the UD, and lit it on fire with a lighter. The UD shriveled and warped. Pomodoro sighed dramatically, lifted the sunglasses onto his or forehead, and rubbed his or eyes with his or fists. A split second before the sunglasses dropped back onto the person's nose, Chambers could see the shimmer of bright golden irises.
I did some technical analysis based on what Easton told me. I think I found some of the problematic code, so I'm selling you something useful, not just showing you a torture video of your ex-pal dying.
How much?
Chambers asked. The small person shrugged.
How much what?
How much money do you want?
I don't want money. I want you to help me control the AI that's behind the infiltration of Branch.
You're out of your fucking mind.
Chambers scoffed.
How the hell could I possibly help you do that? I don't know anything about it.
Let me make this simple.
Pomodoro said.
If you refuse my generous offer to help you, I will publicly expose this Branch vulnerability, which will ruin your company. Then, I'll expose your murder for hire of Darden and Sola. Finally, I'll return to this arcology when you least expect it, and I'll torture you like I did to Easton. Maybe worse, so don't fucking cross me.
Chambers could feel her heart beating in her chest. Although diminutive in stature, Pomodoro scared her.
If I say yes, what do I get out of it?
Chambers asked.
I will give you the exploit,
the person said.
Based on my analysis, the Song AI is decentralized, which makes it difficult to control because there is no single point of infiltration. It lives on devices, computers, and servers all around the world. To control it, I would have to be able to infect every piece of the AI on all those different servers, UDs, and computers.
I still don't see what you get from this, if not money.
Shut your mouth and listen.
Pomodoro stood.
I've tailored malware that will, in essence, attach to the AI's code living in a person's Branch. It will infect the AI's code, and when signals are sent from Branch back to the various nodes in its decentralized network, I will take control of the AI's entire system bit by bit.
I don't understand. What will I need to do?
Issue a patch for Branch that includes my code. When people update their branches on their UDs, my code reaches every infected branch, and thus all instances of the AI that have weaseled into Arbor devices.
How are you going to get me your exploit?
Chambers asked. The small person held up a hardware storage disk the size of a penny.
This hard drive contains my code. It also includes a patch that should prevent the AI from any further exploitation of any branch. Give it to your software updates team. Tell them you developed it. Make sure their work is protected by an ironclad NDA.
Chambers slowly took the thumb drive and held it.
One more thing,
Pomodoro said.
The password is Discord, all caps.
Is that all?
Pomodoro walked away without responding, disappearing behind the rocky landscape.
Holy shit, what am I getting myself into?
Chambers thought. She started to walk toward the exit of the Flowerbud Arcos Park, staring at the storage disk in her palm. Suddenly, in the middle of the quiet and tranquil path, Chambers collapsed onto the ground, writhing, legs thrashing, kicking gravel path stones. The only sounds were the park's birds, but Chambers' brain perceived sounds simultaneously so loud, high-pitched, and deep, it felt as if the organs of her ears were rupturing. Though nothing touched her, she felt as if someone were stabbing her with knives repeatedly and slicing her skin into ribbons. She dug her nails into her chest, her muscles contracting as she raked deep and jagged blood-filled valleys into her own flesh. Though her eyes were pressed shut, her mind flooded with horrific images of murder, genocide, and rape. Though she was healthy, her heart began to beat arrhythmically. Her whole body convulsed. Her jaw clamped on her tongue, and blood streamed from between her pressed lips as she screamed into her locked mouth. Her face turned blue, and she stopped breathing. The storage disk tumbled from her hand onto the ground next to her body. In her moment of death, as some unknown force commandeered her mind and caused her body to go haywire, a final thought crossed Chambers' mind. After all, it was true. Branch, her life's work, was more than revolutionary. It was evolutionary. Thanks for listening to the Digital Song Podcast. Please subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. All writing is 100% original and human imagined and created by me, Bantam Drexler. All editing and audio engineering done by me. Original music by me, augmented by Suno. Podcast voice audio generated using 11 Labs. Copyright Bantam Drexler. Follow me on any of the socials, at Bantam Drexler, or check me out at bantamdrexler.com. See you in the future.